Now, as you've probably discovered, 1 Chronicles is quite a book. All of these names, you know, I get bored reading the names of my own ancestors, much less those of somebody else. But these records were important. It was important that they were able to prove the fact that they were Jews, especially when they returned from the Babylonian captivity. Those who could not prove their genealogy were not allowed in the service of God. And there were some who were claiming that they were descendants of Levi, but they could not bring their genealogies, and thus they were forbidden in the service of God. But more important even than that was that inasmuch as the prophecies declared that the Messiah would be from the tribe of Judah, the family of Jesse, the house of David, it was necessary that these records be kept intact up until the coming of Jesus Christ, in order that it might be proved that he fulfilled that requirement, that he was of the tribe of Judah and the family of Jesse and the house of David. Now, significantly, since the coming of Jesus Christ, they no longer keep the genealogical records. If a man should come along today and say, "I'm the Messiah," he would be hard-pressed. In fact, it would be impossible for him to prove that he was from the tribe of Judah, from the family of Jesse, and from the house of David, because they no longer have these genealogical records. But up until the coming of Christ, it was important that these records be kept in order that there could be offered that proof of his messiahship, one further, one of the 300 or more proofs that do exist to the fact that he was indeed the promised Messiah of the Old Testament. So, 1 Chronicles can get a little laborious in reading, so I suggest you skip all of the listings of names. And tonight, we surely aren't going to read all the names for you, because I can't pronounce them any better than you can. My guess is as good as yours in the pronunciation of these names. And rather than stumbling over them, we're just going to seek to draw out some of the interesting little nuggets that are thrown in every once in a while in the early part. But that's why we took 19 chapters. Towards the end, they don't list so many names and they get into some of the story. But one part of this reading for tonight that I found especially interesting this week was the 12th chapter of 1 Chronicles. And we'd like to draw your attention this morning to 1 Chronicles chapter 12. Now, this is recording that particular period of history when David had been driven by Saul out of the kingdom. Saul had been chasing David all over Israel. As David said, "You've chased me like a partridge over the mountains." And David had been hiding in caves in the wilderness, running from Saul. But every place David would go, there would be those that were opposed to David who would come back and report to Saul where David was hiding. They said, "He's gone down to the wilderness of Zin," or Ziph. "Now he's over in Ziklag." And every place he would go, these fellows would report on him. And Saul was pursuing David around the country until David finally said, "I've had it. I know one day he's going to kill me." And he went over to the land of the Philistines. He was driven out of the land completely. And he came over to the land of the Philistines, where he knew that Saul would no longer pursue him. Now, David is a very interesting type of Jesus Christ. And we would like to look at David this morning as a type of Jesus Christ. And while he was in the land of the Philistines, men began to gather to David from all over the country. And as in verse 22, day by day they came unto David until it became a mighty host like the host of God. And so we see David as a beautiful type of Jesus Christ, and those that were gathering to David as a beautiful type of the church. Let's look at it in that light. First of all, David is an interesting type of Jesus Christ because the kingdom actually belonged to David. He had been anointed by God as king over Israel. One day, God said to Samuel, "How long are you going to weep over Saul, seeing I have rejected him? Go down to Bethlehem, to the family of Jesse, and anoint one of his sons to be king over Israel, the son that I will show you." So Samuel, under guise, because if Saul knew that what Samuel was doing, he would have had his head. And so under a guise, he came on down to Bethlehem, to the house of Jesse, and he said to Jesse, "I have an errand to perform upon one of your sons. Would you bring them in?" And the first, the oldest son, Eliab, was a big, good-looking guy. And Samuel, when he saw him, said, "Oh, surely this is the Lord's choice. This is the one God has chosen." And the Lord said, "No, Samuel, he's not the one. Man looks on the outward appearance, I look on the heart." And so one by one, Jesse's boys were paraded into the room, stood before Samuel, and he said, "No, no, 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 no." He said, "Don't you have any more boys? Is that it?" Probably thinking, "Lord, you know, am I hearing right now?" And Jesse said, "Well, I have one more, but he's just a little fellow. He's out watching the sheep." He said, "Would you call him in?" And so David came running in from the fields. And as Samuel looked upon this young boy, the Lord said, "He's the one." And he took his cruse of oil and he poured it over David's head. And at that moment, David was anointed by God to be king over Israel. He was God's choice for this position. Now, though David was anointed to be the king, still Saul was on the throne. Saul was still ruling. And Saul, in the days to come, did his best to destroy David. By force, Saul sought to hold on to that which was no longer rightfully his, even driving David into exile. Even as we see today, Christ, the anointed king over the earth, and yet Satan is doing his best by force to hold on to this old world, that which is no longer rightfully his. And yet he seeks by force to hold on to that which has been really stripped from him through the death of Jesus Christ. David is an interesting type of Christ in that he was despised and rejected by men. He had some strong enemies. The Edomite Doeg, the men of Ziph who came and reported to Saul his whereabouts. And everywhere he would go, they were reporting to Saul of David's position and all, because they were opposed to him. He was despised and rejected. Saul hated him and was attempting to destroy him. And finally, David was driven from the kingdom completely. And he waited there in a foreign land until the father delivered the kingdom into his hand. Even as Christ is waiting now until the father shall subdue all things unto him. And he will then come and take the kingdom. David is a beautiful example of Christ and a type of Christ in that while he was in exile, men began to gather themselves unto David. They came to David in the time of his humiliation and in the time of his rejection. And those men that came to David were men who were one day destined to reign with David when the kingdom finally came under his power. David is a type of Christ in that he received all of the men who came to him. Now, we are told in 1 Kings that there came to David all of those that were in debt. Men that were trying to flee from their past, from their past records. And they came to David. There came to him also, it said, all of those that were discontent and all of those that were distressed. And David received them and they became the mighty men in David's army. They came from all kinds of backgrounds, from all of the segments of the society. Some were mighty men, others were captains over the thousands, and they gathered to David and they left all in order that they might follow after David. They were willing to bear the reproach of David who had been driven from the kingdom. Because they were convinced that one day David would indeed be the king over Israel. And they were willing to come to him, though at that time it meant a separation. They were willing to make that commitment in hopes of the future kingdom under him. Now, these men who came to David came from the different tribes. And in the first part of chapter 12, we are told concerning the mighty men from the tribe of Benjamin. Now, inasmuch as Saul the king was from Benjamin, David was not certain of these men's allegiance. And so when they came from the tribe of Benjamin, he said, "Are you come in peace or have you come to betray me to my enemy? If you've come in peace, peace be to you." And one of their spokesmen said, "We are thine." He made his commitment to David. "David, we're yours." And that full-on commitment of, "Hey, I'm thrown in with you, buddy. I'm on your side. I'm going to be with you." And they said, "We are thine. We are on your side. Peace be unto you." And so the men of David, men of Benjamin, and these fellows were very skillful fellows in war. They were able to take and throw a sling at a hair's breadth. They were skillful in the use of the bow. They were mighty men. They were brave men. And they made their commitment to throw in their lot with David in hopes of that coming kingdom. And then we read that there were men from the tribe of Gad. And these were also mighty men, men of valor, men of war. The least of them that came from the tribe of Gad, it says, was over a captain over 100. And the greatest was a captain over the thousands. And so they gathered to David. It said, and they separated themselves unto David. And when you make your commitment to Jesus Christ, it does call for a real separation from the old life, a separation from the world. The Bible says, come ye apart from them and be ye separate, saith the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters. And if you're to make a real commitment to Jesus Christ, it means a separating of yourself from the old life, from the past life of sin, and it means a separating yourself from the corrupted morality of this world in which we live. You cannot really be on the Lord's side and still live under the standards of the corrupted society today. You've got to separate yourself from the filth and the pollution of the world around you and really live a separated life unto the Lord. And these men of Gad were willing to make that commitment, and they separated themselves unto David. And they were willing to hazard their lives to be among David's men. It said that when they came to the Jordan River, that it was that time of the year when the Jordan was overflowing its banks. Here was a real hazard in their way, a real kind of a discouragement. You come and the river is flooding. But these guys were so determined to be a part of David's men that they swam the Jordan River at the flood season and made their way out of the land into the land, the strange land where David was, and they joined themselves to David there in the land of the Philistines, hazarding their lives, venturing out because they were convinced that David was God's man, and they chose to go along with God's choice. And so the Bible tells us that day by day these men were gathering unto David until they became a mighty host like the host of God. God took them, or David took them, from all of these very backgrounds. But because of their commitment, because of their determination, these men were welded together in a mighty army, a mighty host, even as the host of God. Now, as we look at Christ as the fulfillment of these types, we realize that Christ is the true king over the earth. The word Christ is a Greek word which comes from the Hebrew word Mashiach or Messiah. The word literally means the anointed one. And what it is saying is that Jesus is the one that God has anointed to be king over the earth. As we read in the Psalms, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? For they have risen against the Lord and against his anointed one. The world, it's talking about the world system, who has risen against God's anointed one. Jesus is the king. God has anointed him. But even as they rose up against David, so the men of the world have risen against Jesus Christ. Yet he who sits in the heavens will laugh, for he will have them in derision. For he said, I will set my king upon the holy hill of Zion. And God is going to set his king on the holy hill of Zion one day very soon. The prophecy concerning Jesus Christ in Isaiah, the 9th chapter, declares, for unto us, well, unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David, and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it in righteousness and in judgment from henceforth even forever. For the zeal of the Lord of hosts is going to perform this. And so though he was despised and rejected, yet he is God's anointed. And one day he is going to come and he is going to sit upon the throne. That mighty God, that Prince of Peace. And the world, I am convinced, will never know peace until he sits as the Prince of Peace upon the throne. But as David, Jesus was despised and rejected. Again, a fulfillment of the prophecy of Isaiah where it declares he was despised and rejected of men. A man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. There is a very sad and pathetic verse in 1 John, first chapter of John, that declares, he was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came to his own, and his own received him not. The tragic story of Jesus Christ. He came to the world that he had created, yet the world didn't know him, didn't recognize him. He came to his own, they didn't receive him. They cried out, "Crucify him! We have no king but Caesar." And they rejected him from reigning over them, for they said, "We will not have this man to rule over us." And let me tell you that the majority of the world today is still saying the same thing. The vast majority in the world today is still saying, "We will not have this man to rule over us," and they will not submit their lives to be ruled by Jesus Christ. They will bow to a Caesar, they'll bow to a despot, they'll bow to their own flesh, but they won't bow to Jesus Christ. And there are many today who are still seeking to crucify him, to get rid of him. And he has been exiled from the world that he created, but he waits patiently until that day when the Father shall subdue all things under his feet and shall give to him the kingdom that was promised unto him. For it is yet ordained of God that Jesus Christ shall reign over the earth. But presently, he is despised and rejected. But while he is there waiting, there are men from all segments of society that are gathering to him day by day. They're coming. They are separating themselves from the world system around them. And they're coming to Jesus Christ. And they're willing to lay down their lives for him if necessary. They're saying, "Okay, Lord, I'm going to bow to your throne. I'm going to serve you. I'm going to put my lot in with you." And those are coming who'd like to get rid of their past, escaping their past. They're coming to him, and he's wiping out all of their past and giving them a whole new beginning. There are those that are coming to him who are discontented with the world the way it is. And believe me, I'm discontented with this world. I look at the newspapers and I see the things that are happening on the local level. I see the increasing crime. I see the horrible crimes. I realize that there's some fellow going along the freeways in a van and picking up young men, 39 of them now, murdering them, leaving their nude bodies beside the road. And these things that are happening, I'm discontented with the way things are going. I'm discontented with the government and the way things are going. And that I am just not at home in this world. I feel very alien to the things that are happening in this world around me. I've become discontented. And I've come to Jesus Christ. And I said, "Lord, I know that men haven't received you yet. They're not willing to make you king yet, but I want to make you king in my life. Lord, I want to go with you, and I don't care where. Lord, I'll lay down my life for you. I'll gladly lay down my life for you, Lord. I'm ready to put my lot in with you, and I'm swearing allegiance to you, Lord. I'm with you." And wherever you send, whatever you say to do, Lord, I'm there. I'm ready to obey. And I've put my lot in with him, and I've placed my life in his hands. There came to David those that were distressed, and I'll tell you, I'm distressed when I look at this world around me. Very interesting book has been written by General Lewis W. Walt, a retired general from the United States Marine Corps. I'd like to read you just the preface to this book, a portion of the preface. General Walt says that this book is addressed primarily to the 29 million Americans who have served their country in the armed forces, and to those millions of young Americans who will have to bear the burdens of the future wars. For this is a call to arms, a plea to all of you to fight a battle now to prevent a war tomorrow. Unless you respond, both veteran and youth, the sacrifices of the past and the promises of the future will vanish down the drain of history. I have never asked Marines to go into battle without telling them exactly what they face, so far as I knew it. My one unbreakable rule has always been to stick with the facts and tell the truth. And that is what I'm going to do in this book. The facts are these. The United States has been brought by its own civilian leaders to a position of military inferiority to the Soviet Union. At this moment, you and your loved ones stand exposed to physical destruction. The option of whether you shall live or die rests primarily with the hardened men who occupy the Kremlin. If they should choose tomorrow or next year or the year after to annihilate you and your family, there is little the U.S. government could do to stop them except surrender. I'm distressed over the conditions of the United States and over the conditions of the world. And I'm glad that I have submitted my life to the authority and to the government of Jesus Christ. And my primary allegiance is not to the United States government, but my primary allegiance is to Jesus Christ, the one I live for and the one I serve. And if our government should ever create legislation that would violate my conscience in my service to Jesus Christ, I would have to become a criminal. Because my first allegiance is to him and to obey him above any other. And men are coming to Jesus Christ because they are distressed with what's happening in the world. They're discontented with things the way they are, and they're willing to cut off the past and make a commitment and a surrender and to live a life of separation from the world in order to follow after Jesus Christ. Now, my king is coming again very soon to set up his kingdom on this world. I've been praying for it, and I know he's going to answer. I've been praying, thy kingdom come and thy will be done in this earth even as it is in heaven. And the world is so far down the tube that I know that my king is coming very, very soon. There are all kinds of indications around me that cause me to be confident of the fact that it's almost over. My king will soon be here. But before he comes to set up his kingdom, he is coming to take me out of this mess. Because there is a necessary renovation that must take place before the kingdom is established. This world is so corrupt. Even as in the days of Noah, when there had to be sort of a renovation by a flood, there is another renovation coming by fire. And my king is coming to take me out of here before that renovation takes place, that he would not judge me with the wicked. This renovation is going to be a time of awesome horror for those that are upon the earth. as the judgment of God is poured out, and as the earth goes through the cataclysmic convulsions of that tribulation period. But I'm expecting my King to come most any time. For he told me to pray that I might escape all of these things, that I might be standing with him. And that's what I've been praying. And so you might say that basically I have one short word of warning and exhortation to each of you this morning. And that would be, get right or get left. And we're just about there. Shall we pray? Father, we are so excited when we think of thy coming kingdom, when righteousness will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea, when men will live together in peace and love. Oh God, this poor world has just about had it. Come quickly, Lord Jesus, and establish your kingdom.